Is there a blunder in the new Bob Woodward book, which is called Fear, Trump in the White House? Craig Parshall, a best-selling author, has written an article recently posted in the Christian Post. We're going to talk about this right now. I'm Jerry Newcomb. This is Vocal Point. And Craig, thanks so much for joining us. I appreciate it.
It's always a pleasure, Jerry.
All right. Now, I understand, and you as an author can appreciate this, they are rolling out, they are printing 1 million copies of this book. That means they anticipate this will be a mega, mega bestseller. And, of course, Bob Woodward already has 18 bestsellers under his belt. So this is really an amazing book. And you wrote an article about it. Tell us about this.
Well, it came to my attention. I knew about Bob Woodward's work in the past, and, of course, he's famous for Washington Post Watergate fame. And he's written about other presidents in the past. And so when I knew that there would be a release of his new book about President Trump, I was eager, as many people, to know his take. And then came an article in the CNN news release last week. CNN staff reporters and researchers put together an article promoting Bob Woodward's book and then trumpeting, no pun intended, because it's clearly a hit piece against the Trump administration, heralding the fact that in one part of the book, and they reproduce the letter in the CNN article from the book, they indicate that a letter had been on President Trump's desk in the Oval Office. And according to Bob Woodward's book, as related by CNN in their promotion of his book, the letter was a letter from President Trump to the president of South Korea. Now, South Korea, of course, as we all know, is a great ally of the United States. Mm-hmm. They are also key to monitoring the activities of the very troublesome North Korea and its possible nuclear ambitions. The letter indicated that President Trump found that the current trade agreements between South Korea and the United States were not optimal and that he was withdrawing the current trade agreement, but was willing for the next 6 months, and this was a letter from last year, by the way, for the 6 months after the letter, was willing to renegotiate trade elements with South Korea. Now, that letter would have been in keeping if it was genuine and if, in fact, it had been sent, which it wasn't. It would have been in keeping with Mr. Trump's approach to nations, otherwise friendly nations around the world, including Great Britain, and Germany and other countries, where he's been very tough about evening the trade balance between the United States and the rest of the world. But here's where it really gets dicey, because Bob Woodward says he has it on good authority that the economic advisor to President Trump, past tense, because he has now left the White House, Gary Kahn, found out about the letter on President Trump's desk, took the letter surreptitiously, removed it so that President Trump could not sign it because he feared for the United States security, national security specifically, if the letter was signed and the trade deal was called off. Now, that was Bob Woodward's information, and, of course, Gary Kahn is front and center. But two things I want to share with your audience, Jerry. Number one, it became very suspicious to me when I read that CNN article and they reproduced the letter that at the top of the letter, in bold letters, it says that the letter was pre-decisional and deliberative. Now, those terms might not mean a lot to folks out there, but they mean something to lawyers who do work in federal agencies like I do, dealing with the Freedom of Information Act. In the Freedom of Information Act, certain governmental documents and letters are not allowed to be viewed by the public. And one such exception is letters like this that are deliberative, meaning they're not final decisions. It's a draft letter that they circulate. They think maybe we'll sign it, maybe we'll change it, maybe we'll ditch it, maybe we'll throw it away. But they are pre-decisional, meaning that there's nothing final about the letter, and there's no indication Mr. Trump, President Trump, was absolutely going to sign it in any event. So CNN talking about the fact that this letter was going to be signed and it would endanger national security as if to impugn the White House in that way is simply not true. But more importantly, Gary Kahn has now come out within the last 24 hours, and he's indicated, you know what, I have taken a look at this book, and it does not reflect, he says, my experience in the White House. Now, we didn't give details, as to say, Mr. Khan, but it casts more shadows of doubt about the accuracy of Mr. Woodward's book.
Yeah, this is very interesting, specifically in the example of this memo. This, in a sense, is a brainstorming session. This is kind of like, well, what if? And they're sort of thinking these things through. Nothing is final. It's like the example my brother's often said. He's very successful, but he's often said, you know, if you're worried about something, take out a list of paper, a sheet of paper, and just list what's the absolute worst that could happen in this scenario. Write it all down. And then face that, and then you throw the piece of paper away. And a lot of times those things don't happen anyway. There's a lot of things like that. So in other words, they've ripped this out of context and basically heralded something that would have been final had it not Mr. Khan saved the world by, you know, snatching this memo surreptitiously, I assume, you know. So this is bad. This is bad reporting.
Yeah, the whole episode, Jerry, is cast in doubt. Number one, did Mr. Khan really take the letter? Number two, did he take it because he wanted to add a few thoughts on it and then give it back to Mr. Trump? We don't know the details, except that he has cast some real suspicion on the accuracy of Mr. Woodward generally. But the banner at the top of the letter, and by the way, I've seen White House letters, at the top it says from the White House, this was a draft letter. It says right at the top, basically, this cannot be disclosed to the public. This is confidential because it's, as you say, just a brainstorming draft for us to discuss. You know, right now, juries around the country are hearing cases, civil and criminal, and courts strenuously barricade the public and reporters and the press from getting into a jury room while the jury's deliberating, because you don't want outside pressure or interference to those very important deliberations where a person's freedom or imprisonment may be at issue, or someone may win or lose a very important case. So those jury deliberations are protected for that reason. Shouldn't the White House deliberations on non-final issues like this also be protected? I'm truly worried about future presidents now saying, if we put anything in writing, if we jot down notes on a legal pad during a national security meeting, are those notes going to show up in the New York Times?
Wow. Yeah, things can be easily taken out of context. I was just in Philadelphia last week and toured again the Independence Hall and the tour, you know, and they're explaining how during that hot summer they actually barricaded the windows, that's a report, so that nobody from the outside could hear what was going on because they didn't want that stuff taken out of context. And this is clearly what seems to be happening. It doesn't seem like Trump can get a break from the media. You know, it's like breaking news. You know, Trump woke up this morning and, you know, got out of bed and went to the White House. You know, oh, there's trouble at a brewing because he's there. You know, it's just, it's like this guy can't do anything right in their
book. You and I, and I have known you for many years, you and I are both great believers in the freedoms of the press. Enshrined in the First Amendment.
Yep.
In fact, and you're a historian too, so you'll appreciate this. In the Continental Congress, at least a full year before the Declaration of Independence, they wrote a letter to the inhabitants of Quebec up in Canada, hoping to get their help in the event of a revolutionary war against Britain. And one of the things they said is, here's the vision we have for the future of the colonies if we form a more perfect union, a new nation, and we break away from Great Britain. One of the things they said was freedom of the press. That is to say, the freedom of the press to hold political leaders accountable. So you and I believe very much in that principle. But it's one thing to hold them accountable. It's another thing to become saboteurs.
Boy, that's a great point. What do you think about that letter, the anonymous letter from within the White House?
Yeah, this is even more troubling. You know, if you look at the New York Times as an example, saying that they're going to publish an anonymous so-called op-ed from someone from deep within the existing White House, if it's true that that's who wrote it, and by the way, I've heard some theories, I can't validate it, I'll simply share it. One of the theories is, it really isn't one person, it's a number of sources that the New York Times may have gleaned from a couple of former employees of the White House or enemies, political enemies of Trump, who may have been with him for a while and then broke off. Well, and they've cobbled together these instances, and then they said, we're going to make it an anonymous op-ed. Don't know whether it's true, but I wouldn't doubt it.
Yeah, but, you know, if that were the case, even there, it lacks integrity, because the article then should be, this is a, you know, an article reflecting the views of, you know, three or four people who spoke with us off the record or whatever. But yeah. You get to the certain point where it's after a while, how much anonymity can we take?
Yeah, every newspaper, every major newspaper, and even the smaller ones, all have somewhere within their, you know, the collection of important documents, charters, and corporate papers. They also have a code of ethics that they ask their reporters and staff to abide by. I know this because I've been in litigation with a number of newspapers around the country, and they all have these documents. The question is, are you living up to it? You know, first, just like a doctor, okay, raise your right hand. First, do no harm, okay? If you're going to report the news or say that you are, first, don't tell lies.
Yeah, great point. Well, now, Bob Woodward has this great reputation on the one hand, and on the other hand, I remember there were some controversial things that he wrote. So, for example, when he was talking about the head of the CIA under President Reagan, he claimed that he had a bedside in the hospital interview with that gentleman, and he said something like, I believe, is supposedly what he said. And I remember reading one time in the Washington Times, and this may have been written tongue-in-cheek, I think it was, they said, oh, no, he misinterpreted it. He didn't say, I believed, he said, please leave. But either way, it's just sort of like, wow, do you have to build your case based on all this kind of questionable stuff? That's the one thing, and this is a different issue, but that's one thing I love about Christianity, is that it is based on the firm foundation of the facts of history. If Jesus Christ did not literally, physically, bodily rise from the dead historically, then what we believe is a bunch of fairy tales, and it ought to, you know, it ought to just shrink up and go the way of all flesh. But no, Jesus did rise from the dead historically, and that changes everything. So in other words, you should be able to build your case on a solid foundation, not just, you know, speculation here and speculation there.
Yeah, that's a great point. We should be, as followers of Jesus, believers in the truth, seekers of the truth, preachers and sharers of the truth, livers of the truth, and the bedrock to the principle of truth is fact. That which is factually, historically, and actually true. Not what we want to be true, not what we would want to wish into reality, because the reality isn't what we want, but rather what is truthfully true. What Francis Schaeffer used to call true truth. In other words, truth with a absolute factual foundation. And if you're a follower of truth, then you are going to do the right thing. You're going to be people of integrity and character. We need that right now in the major press more than any time.
Mm. Okay, we have about 45 seconds left. What else would you like to say in conclusion? And in fact, I do want to ask it this way. 1 million copies to be published of this Woodward book? I mean, that's a big vote of confidence on their part. Your thoughts?
Yeah, it really is. Now, part of that, by the way, and that is a huge print, first-run print. Usually blockbusters, usually tell-alls and exposés will go between 500,000 and 1 million. But when that figure is shared by the publisher, that also doesn't tell you that they have all printed them at the same time. Rather, they have planned on a publishing run of a first edition. So if the numbers drop precipitously, I'm telling you right now, the publisher has a backup plan. They aren't going to sit there with a warehouse and use the books for firewood.
Okay, Craig Parshall, thanks so much for joining us. Appreciate it. Always a pleasure.
Thanks, Jerry.